Welcome to Period Drama Queens, a podcast exploring period dramas.
The drama, the periods.
The tropes, the frissons.
The quips and the quaps.
This season, we're taking a turn about the 90s.
We'll discuss the best period dramas created in the era of girl power, crop tops and grunge.
Time for introductions. We're two best friends who live on different sides of the world.
And we both love period dramas.
I'm Jenny, an English lit nerd and prudish mother of one who once attended a hip-hop class and is universally described as tolerable, I suppose.
I'm Millie, a sexually confused mother of none who has never attended a hip-hop class. I'd never talk about myself this way, but my friends have described me as a famous wit.
So bad. So bad.
I thought this podcast was about menstruation. I've been prepping a lot for menstruation talk.
Oh, well, I thought that could be a fun way to start, which is an update on our sort of menstruation cycles. This week, still not menstruating post-pregnancy.
Oh, this week, felt terrible, realised it's probably because I'm PMSing.
Period
dramas.
What film are we talking about today?
Emma from 1996, directed by Douglas McGrath. That famous auteur never did anything since, I don't think. Written by Douglas McGrath, based on the novel Emma by Jane Austen. And the cast is mostly Gwyneth Paltrow. Everyone.
90% Gwyneth Paltrow.
90% Gwyneth Paltrow.
And she was 21 at the time.
Oh, but that's appropriate because Emma's 21.
Exactly. She was the correct age, which is quite cool.
Who else is in it? Jeremy Northam is Mr. Knightley. Toni Collette's Harriet Smith. Ewan McGregor is Frank Churchill, who I always forget he's in this. And the casting directors are Mary Selway and Sarah Trivett.
P-E-R-I-O-D, find out what it means to me. P-E-R-I-O-D, take care, grab a leech.
So we like to start off by describing our relationship to the film. Period dramas are very personal for us.
Mm-hmm. When I was a child, I wasn't allowed to watch many things. I was only allowed to watch Eddie Izzard's stand-up, Pixar films, and in the 90s, there was only like three Pixar films, and we only had one on video, and period dramas. Therefore, the 1990s period dramas really hold a special place in my heart.
Well, I actually have quite a strong relationship with this film. So we went on summer holidays one year to a holiday house in Scotland. We had a VHS player, which is very exciting. They only had two videos, Men in Black and Emma. Every day of that two-week holiday, we watched both Men in Black and Emma. And I was eight, and I just thought the fashion was amazing, and the dresses were beautiful. And I, like, would draw the dresses. So as much as the wigs and the hair is terrible, I just think, oh, oh.
I do love the film and the fashions and the silliness of it all, and I love seeing Emma's undoing in a kind of sadistic way.
Terrible.
I know, that makes me sound horrible.
I don't know that about you. That's awful. I feel like I'm the evil one, but that is awful.
period dramas.
What are our overall reflections on the film?
Well, speaking generally, two thumbs up.
This rendition is, in my mind, still the iconic adaptation of Emma. I've seen all of the other ones, but including Clueless, of course, which is kind of its own thing. But yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow, for me, is actually a really good Emma. The character herself is not entirely likable, and Gwyneth Paltrow is not entirely likable. It's filled with so much nostalgia for me. I love it. I love the fashions. I love the feel. It does not feel realistic, and perhaps that's why it got criticised for kind of missing a lot of the social satire possibilities, because everyone's a little bit two-dimensional in their characteristics. But flip, as a 7, 8, 9, 10, and now 30-year-old. Wait, am I 31? I think I'm 31. I still love it. How about you?
Rewatching it now, it's a Miramax film, so it was produced by Harvey Weinstein.
I know.
He's all over it. Like, I think, was it the first film that he and Gwyneth Paltrow did together? It might have been one of the first ones they did together.
Right.
And I think it was maybe during this film even that he harassed her. And so that, I think, like, brings up a question of what do you do with any kind of product or art or whatever you want to call it that's been made by somebody who, partly by somebody who is an abuser, because lots of other people made it, wasn't just him.
And it's that age-old question of like the artist and the art, and can you separate the two? Yeah, it feels like it's sort of writing off the amazing work of everyone else who was involved in that film to kind of dismiss it entirely. But you're right, it still is kind of a bit of a dark cloud over that and over a lot of cinema.
Careers were maybe like boosted by it. I don't know. I didn't actually look at the context of the time into how it was received and what role it played in people's careers.
Like you said, it was Gwyneth Paltrow's like kind of big launch. And Toni Collette had, I think, done Muriel's Wedding.
That was what? That was like Ewan McGregor going from kind of a indie cult film and in Trainspotting, and Toni Collette, Australian cinema, to a big time.
I'm sure you've read this as well, but that the director, Douglas McGrath, had wanted to basically do a Upper East Side, New York rendition of Emma.
Yeah.
And then Clueless came out the year before, so he was pretty devastated. And then decided to change it up and just do a kind of period piece. I don't know, I read a lot of scathing reviews saying that he kind of achieved neither his updated version or a true to form an adaptation of the novel.
I prefer Clueless, and I really liked the 2020, early 2020 Emma a lot. I really liked that Emma. The other thing that I want to say about my overall reflections about it is I really don't like the relationship between Emma and Mr. Knightley. I like the fact that they're friends. Friends to lovers is a good trope. I don't like the word lovers, but that's what the trope is called. He's so much older than her, and he has known her since she was a baby, and he was pretty much a grown-up at that point. I know. And
you got to blame Jane for that. That's not this film's rendition.
But I don't like the just the power dynamic that's kind of somewhat in that relationship. Like, he's so much older than her. He thinks of himself as her big brother, that he can tell her what to do and tell her off and scold her.
Yeah.
And then at some point, like, they're meant, like, how are they going to reestablish being equals? Or establish being equals in that relationship when they've got such a dynamic of he's, like, the moral authority over her?
Yeah, I guess just because she's hot and young. That's her capital. well, no, I mean, seriously. Like, I think that's what she is bringing to it. I just want to do a shout out for the apple garlands. Did you clock those apple garlands?
I didn't, but I did clock that there's a scene in the orchard where there's just decaying apples everywhere, and it drove me crazy.
Oh, I know that. Really annoyed me. And Harriet Smith is like most ineffective. Is she catching butterflies? Is she trying to get the apples down? Whatever she's doing, she's failing and just laughing inanely. It drove me crazy.
She's tight or something. But wow. I was like, Emma managed her estate very well. There's no way that she would just let those apples rot on the ground, Douglas.
I know. Such a waste. Well, later we see her stringing them up in the church with Mr. Elton into garlands, like for, I presume, the harvest festival, because there's like some lovely wheat sheaves as well going on.
Maybe there was a big apple surplus that year.
Maybe. We can only hope.
Period dramas. Caleb, my husband, has a bee in his bonnet. We've got many bees in his bonnet. You could almost say that his bonnet is more of a beehive.
You might also say, hey Caleb, just remove the bonnet. Have a break.
And I think it's actually quite a good point that casting directors should have like more kudos in the film industry. Casting directors are often women. The casting directors for this were Mary Selway and Sarah Trevis.
You know who's well cast in this? I always think Jane is well cast. Like Jane Fairfax.
Yeah, Jane is good. She's kind of unmemorable.
Yeah, but I feel like she's sort of beautiful and elegant enough that you can see, and reserved and kind enough that you can see why Emma would be so jealous of her, as opposed to the latest Emma. The actress who plays Jane in that just looks so sort of worried and downcast all the time that I don't think Emma would see her as a sort of worthy of her slighting or seeing her as a rival. Harriet is really good in the new one. The new one is kind of more caricature-y. Harriet in the new one is just so silly, which brings us kind of back to Toni Collette, who was an amazing actress, and I love her in pretty much everything, but I feel like she's so miscast as Harriet Smith.
Yeah, well, I agree. Like, I think pretty much, okay, the only good piece of casting in this, I think, are Miss Bates.
Oh, divine.
Oh, this is interesting. That's Sophie Thompson, who's Emma Thompson's sister. So, yeah, so I think Harriet is miscast. Ewan McGregor, Frank Churchill, is miscast. I always forget that Ewan McGregor is in this.
I know, me too. Well, I watched the entire film last night and I didn't realise until I was reading who was in it that that was Ewan McGregor. Like, he was that unmemorable to me. It was terrible.
Yeah.
The thing that's memorable about him is his bob.
Yeah, that's really a low light of the film in general, isn't it? Is yeah. How they managed to simultaneously destroy Ewan McGregor as like an amazing actor who'd just come off Trainspotting and put him in this role. Completely waste him. And also the character Frank Churchill is so unmemorable.
Mr. Knightley is terribly cast.
Really?
Really not. I mean, apart from when he says badly done, Emma.
Oh my gosh, I do not mind him at all. I quite like him.
No. And I just think he's got no chemistry with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Really? I think he's a perfect blend of like austere and warm.
Yeah, no, I'm not into it. Okay, so I think it's just so much like a Gwyneth Paltrow vehicle. Gwyneth Paltrow vehicle. Like they were like, Gwyneth Paltrow, we're going to make you a star.
Every review that I read was talking about her swan neck, which I really enjoyed. Gwyneth Paltrow's swan neck.
I don't think Mr. Woodhouse is very well cast either. He's not a hard character.
So break down for me to Toni Collette, because again, I struggle. She's a great actress, but I just feel like she's not the right person to play Harriet Smith.
She doesn't come across as silly enough.
Oh, really? What about the scene when she's pulling out her adorable and the camera like zooms into her little thing of Harriet Smith's most precious possession?
Harriet Smith's most precious possession. That's my favourite bit in the whole movie.
I know. And then she has like a bit of bandage, like a spare bit of unused bandage.
But all of that isn't Toni Collette, the scriptwriter and the props.
Yeah, that's true.
And Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah. Credit where credit's due. Another woman that we've not actually given credit to. Jane. What a writer.
Fashion. Period fashion. Period fashion.
The crinoline, the muslin, the bonnets, the shawls.
The empire waistlines.
Those funny little satin shoe things.
Ooh, I love those. Is it a costume drama or a costume conflama?
Any thoughts on the fashion?
Yes. So, recently rewatched this film, last night in fact, and made several notes. Why does Mr. Elton have the hair of a Lego figure?
Oh, man, it was a wig.
I mean, yeah, that's a simple answer.
My thoughts of the fashion.
Please.
Ewan McGregor's hair was just awful. Distractingly awful.
I know, and he's a beautiful man, but it completely detracted from his beauty.
Ewan McGregor himself has said that he regrets doing this film, and he obviously regrets the hair. You know, I tend to agree with everything that he says. He was terrible in the film. He was terrible, Frank Churchill. I think Frank Churchill is a very interesting character because he's like a bit nuanced and like a bit of a bad boy, bit of a flirt. You know, what are his motives?
He is a disappointing character in this rendition for sure. Yeah, the wig does not do him any favours. The man, this hairstyling is very severe, isn't it, for Gwyneth Paltrow? Like the scraped back?
Very scraped back. But I think throughout the film, as she becomes more moral and more likable, her hair gets softer. Like even though it's meant to be, you know, Regency period, like she looks so 90s and her eyebrows are especially like such 1990s eyebrows.
Those thin little eyebrows?
Yeah. So then, and then her hair like real scraped back.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost expected her to have like those two little strands in the front, remember?
Yeah.
Well, we call them slut bangs.
Oh yeah, the slut strands, yep. Obviously, the Regency era is, and period drama in general of the Jane Austen type is defined by the questionable sort of empire line gowns.
Yeah, I quite like them that she wears when she's doing archery, like the pink.
Yes, I put that pink, like gathered dress. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And she has like a little peach moment at one point.
Yeah, I really like the dresses in it.
Interesting, like for comparing it to Pride and Prejudice, they all have such massive boobs under their chin, you know, like that phenomenon. They don't really suffer from that, perhaps because they're just slighter people, or somehow the cut on this one just makes them look very sort of light and sleek.
Well, I think Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't have the best breasts. There, I said it. Controversial but true, like she doesn't have great boobs. I mean, we all know how she looked in the pink dress where she won the Oscar for Shakespeare in Love, like, her boobs looked awful in it.
Small boobs are beautiful boobs, still.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with small boobs, nothing wrong with big boobs. All boobs are great. No problem with boobs, but Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't have very good breasts.
Coming in hot with a strong opinion, episode one.
So I think that that's, like, part of it. But then I guess it's true that, like, Toni Collette was probably, like, has boobs that you could do the Pride and Prejudice boob shelf with, and they didn't do that. So I guess it was a choice, a Pride and Prejudice choice.
Yeah. Andrew Davis being a perv, maybe.
Now it's time to get into the linguistic fireworks. What are the lines that left us gasping?
And what are the lines that left us gagging? And by gagging, I mean retching.
For me, this film, the only, my favourite line is, "Badly done, Emma."
It is so good. Chilling.
Like, it's not great. I mean, it is great that he's like calling her out on the fact that she's been rude and stuff. Don't really like the fact that he tells her that her romantic partner, like, tells her off as if she's a child. But all that aside, it's just, like, it's iconic.
It's iconic, and it just captures so well his tone and the delivery of it. That feeling where you know you've done something wrong and you're being called out on it.
Yeah.
And the person that you really want to admire you and respect you can see right through you. Oh, it just gets me every time.
What about you? Do you have any other lines that you loved?
Yeah, massive shout out to, I think it's Mr. Woodhouse, who says when he's reading Frank Churchill's letter, there's that fantastic montage. Mr. Woodhouse says, "He does seem to eat a worrying amount of custard."
That is really good.
I mean, who among us has not been worried by the custard consumption of our loved ones?
I don't think there is such a thing as a worrying amount of custard. I fucking love custard. I nearly had custard tonight.
Also, shout out to Miss Bates. I mean, she is divine. That's really Sophie Thompson. When she says, you know, "Thank you for that lovely leg of pork." Pork! Pork!
Yeah, yeah, I love her, like, saying just such, like, random words. That's really good. I like the things that they bring up again. So Miss Bates saying just one word from her sentence to her mother is great. And I also like Mrs. Elton, her, like, "I don't say, but my friends say that
I'm
a fashionista. My friends say that I'm..."
I would not say it myself.
"But my friends say..." I'm like, oh yeah, that's, like, really good.
Even to the final scene, the wedding scene, it's a wrinkle. Yep, it's so good.
It's caricaturing, but still a good commentary on different people.
Yeah, we hadn't commented on her, but I actually think she's very well cast for Mrs. Elton. She is so vulgar in the way that she... "Mr. E, Knightley! Like, that is fantastic.
Yeah, she, and, like, you can tell that the actress is enjoying playing it, because it's, like, a fun character to play.
Other ones that I've come up with that I loved was the amazing moment where Emma is hanging back on the walk where Harriet's with Mr. Elton, and she rounds the corner to see them, like, sort of with the romantic landscape in the background, and him saying, I do love it. Oh, you can't, it's too good to be true. No, I do. I love celery root.
Which is celeria. We googled it. Celeria. I'm quite partial to it.
But my goodness, it's such a good misdirect.
Have you ever match made anyone?
No, I'm horribly unsuccessful. I'm kind of in, worse than Emma in that way. I've tried a lot and it's never worked. Either the person hasn't known that they've been match made and then has ignored the person, or they've just really disliked each other. Other top lines that I enjoyed: "The party spirit has confused you. Please refrain from the intimacy of whispering."
Yeah, that was funny. Okay, to go back to, have you ever match made? Do you think though that matchmaking is, because this book or film, whatever, is kind of trying to make the point that matchmaking is wrong. But do you think that it is wrong?
I mean, fundamentally, no. I think we are not supposed to really judge Emma because she wants something good for her friend. I think actually that's one of the qualities that Mr. Knightley, and to kind of go back to your earlier point about saying it's a kind of inequitable relationship, he does say to her after the dance, you know, I apologize as well, because actually Harriet has some really wonderful qualities. Yeah. And so she manages to change his opinion on someone that he perhaps would have written off and said, you know, she's just a different class, she's not worth my time. But I think that Emma's flaw is not in trying to seek good things for Harriet. It's in completely dismissing, putting her own snobbish ideas onto Harriet and saying that Harriet can't be with Robert Martin, even though they're like really well suited. So I don't think there's anything wrong with matchmaking. I think it's quite a nice thing, but I think it's a problem if you adopt this godlike status that Emma gives herself and think you know better than the people themselves who would suit them well.
And then she's also being, yeah, there's like the snobbishness and the arrogance, I guess, is the problem rather than the matchmaking.
I also just have to mention the amazing bit by Toni Collette when they are playing with puppies. I mean, we've all been there. Your friend's been dumped and you take them off to play with a puppy. Bit of a distraction. And she says, look at their eyes. Aren't their eyes sweet? And then Harry says, Mr. Elton had brown eyes.
Period.
You know what I love, Jenny?
Have you told me before?
I might have done. I might not have done. I don't remember. I say a lot of things. But one of the things I really love is trivia.
Trivia?
Yes, trivia. Let's talk about the trivia of this film that I like.
Let's get trivia, trivia. She's gonna get trivia.
I mean, to be honest, I've just read the IMDb trivia. So the first bit is that there is Miss Bates is played by Emma Thompson's sister, Sophie Thompson. And Mrs. Bates is played by Sophie Thompson and Emma Thompson's mother. Phyllida Law.
But that does sound like a bit of a drag. Like, it sounds like it's a pun. Phyllida Law.
Welcome to the stage, Phyllida Law.
Yeah, exactly.
Phyllida. She's great, I loved her. And then my other bit of trivia is that the music is done by Rachel Portman, who also did the music for Chocolat, which the soundtrack of Chocolat was on high rotation in my house in about the year 2002. But Rachel Portman won an Oscar for this score for Emma. Mm. And she was the first woman to win an Oscar for musical score. Really like Rachel Portman's.
Well, I have a related note that I made, which was during the saucy dance scene, I was like, oh, this song, this folk song that they were dancing to, man, this is ringing all kinds of bells. So was like, I'm gonna go into a deep Google to try and find out. Discovered it was also the iconic song from Pride and Prejudice. But along the way, I did spend about 45 minutes watching elderly people dressed in a lot of pseudo-Renaissance costumes very poorly reenacting this. And then I found out that the song, do you know what the song's called?
It's got a really funny name and I nearly wrote it down. I wrote it down somewhere.
It does. It's called Mr. Beveridge's Maggot.
Like, Mr. Beveridge's Maggot must have been like the Regency periods or the band, the musical minstrels or whatever at each assembly room ball. Or like, I'm not playing that again. But there'll be some basic bitch who comes up and requests it. If I have to play Mr. Whatever His Name's Maggot one more time.
I know. There's some woman with an on-again, off-again, complex relationship with an older gentleman, and she wants this to seal the deal in their marriage. I'm done.
A few lines in, and she's going to cry if I don't play it, and I just, not again.
Part of their contract when they get signed up to the next assembly room, no maggots. No maggots. Oh, what a tune, though, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's very romantic. You can see why it's on such high rotation.
I mean, it's not at all. It's got gravitas, I'll give it that.
I guess I associate with romance. I never thought about it as not being romantic.
No, I think the song as it is. It's not romantic.
Enough. Is it as romantic as the Cantina song in Star Wars?
That's the ultimate snogging song.
That doesn't get you in the mood. Your libido's dead.
Absolutely.
So one of the most revolutionary things about Emma as a piece of writing is that a lot of free and direct speech. So basically what that means is it's a really clever way of getting the reader to position and see things from Emma's point of view that then gets us on side with Emma. So it really, really important to Emma in the canon of Jane Austen's work. And actually scholars have said for literature in general, is Jane Austen's use of free and direct speech in Emma so that we're able to see Highbury and the goings on as she does. So it colours our views about Frank Churchill, and we are limited in our scope of what we know is going on. Because the content of what she's talking about is often sort of written off as frivolous, people haven't given Jane her the props that she deserves for honing that method. But obviously that's something that you lose when you turn it into a film, or that you have to kind of come up with interesting cinematic options to try and replicate positioning us as Emma. So that's one of the main differences, that you lose the subtleties of what Jane Austen's doing. Do you think that we're positioned to see through Emma's point of view in the film?
Well, I was thinking that because there is the voiceover which is, I suppose, is an attempt to do that. But yeah. I don't really think that the film is super duper subjective to Emma. Like, if I compare it to other adaptations of Emma that I've seen, I think probably Clueless does it the best.
In terms of immersing us in Cher's point of view.
Cher's perspective.
Well, I think the point is that she doesn't want us to know that we are seeing it from Emma's point of view. That's what free and direct does. Because if it's like, if it's saying like, I think that Jane Fairfax is a dick, or I think that Robert Martin isn't worth Harriet, then we know that that's what Emma thinks, and that we have distance enough to kind of critique her. Mm. Whereas what Jane Austen does is sort of immerses us in it. So it will have lines of description that then say like, Robert Martin was surely unsuitable, blah, 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 blah. And then it's presented as impartial, objective narrative fact, when actually it's Emma's opinion. So that's what she does, is subtly positions us to see the world through Emma and to notice the things that Emma notices by narrating them.
So Jane Austen's been just real sneaky.
She's been real sneaky.
Because Emma's perspective is so, she thinks that she's so right and she's not got everything sorted, that and she's so confident in what she thinks that she doesn't question it. And then as a reader, and it's only when like she starts to question it that maybe as a reader you're like, oh wait a minute, we were being presented this as fact when actually it was subjective. I have one other thing though that I wanted to say about the book, the movie. I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
So Caleb, my partner, and I were having this big discussion about how there's things in there's like subtext in the book, such as Mrs. Weston / Miss Taylor being pregnant, and such as Harriet's father not being, such as Harriet being illegitimate and her father probably being like a well-to-do businessman as opposed to like some disgraced aristocrat, which is what Emma thinks that is. So there's like kind of a few different things in the book that are more subtext from my understanding. But do you think that at the time those subtexts would have been really obvious, people were reading the book, but now as readers we think of them as like, oh, are they saying this, are they not saying this, because we're in a different social context, and so like the subtle hints are really subtle to us, but to the readers at the time they were like, oh yeah, that's obvious, because that's how they communicated about those more taboo things.
Like, it really falls into the background. I think that's the thing that we obviously lose the most from reading it now, is an understanding of like the implications of class and the kind of delicacy of that system and the space that Emma exists in. Mr. Knightley is kind of seen as the one who understands the world and the class system a bit better, whereas Emma is sort of naively trying to spin this romantic tale that would legitimize her friendship. And also she's very lonely, so she's literally found the only person that's kind of vaguely near her age. But yeah, I think you're right. We do overlook a lot of that, and it probably would have been way more important and maybe position the readers to sort of judge Emma more harshly from the beginning for not having the wisdom to discern the like a disparity in class.
Period.
Ooh, they're looking at each other across a room. Ooh, he held her hand as he led her into a carriage.
So do you have moments of romance that you would like to talk about?
The moment of saying, we could stand up together. It's not like we're brother and sister. Although we almost are. That was obviously a high point.
So you did find that romantic? Or like,
I did find it. I think it was meant to be romantic and it made me lol because I was like, oh, this is so dodgy.
Mm.
Other kind of moments that were sweet. Obviously, the moment of his gallantry. I also really love that Mr. Knightley going to save Harriet from not having a partner at the ball completely outshines Frank Churchill saving them from a bunch of people who were like attacking and going to do God knows what to them. I was like, yeah, okay, Frank Churchill, well done for that. But oh my gosh, did you see the way that Knightley swooped in after a very long time to invite Harriet to dance?
Yeah, the song was nearly over. He timed that so he would get all the kudos and have to do like minimal dancing.
I know, one chorus.
So I didn't think that there was many romantic moments because I think that Emma and Miss Knightley in this have zero chemistry. Like there's nothing going on there between them. My favorite romantic bit is actually when Harriet goes into the shop when it's raining and it's after she's rejected Robert Martin. She gets all flustered and she goes out of the shop and he follows her out and he says that, you know, the way by the barns is flooded. Oh. I thought that was romantic.
I know, and he holds his hat over her head as if it's doing anything to keep the rain off.
That was romantic. They're the true, they're the one true pairing from this film.
They are. They are the real A couple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, you're right, actually. I also think it's quite romantic when he says, after he's been spurned as well, like, oh, I read The Romance of the Forest, by the way.
I think you read a terrible book.
I know. You don't know it's terrible.
Yeah. Do you think it's good?
I mean, what about the absolute sexual climax moment of them pashing in the woods?
Yeah, I don't think anybody was going to climax from that. It's terrible.
Yeah, I have to admit, at that point, I don't know if it was because I was tired or just bored or maybe unconvinced by their chemistry, but I was looking away.
No, they were better as friends.
This comes like a fundamental point with the book, but also the rendition, is like, Emma's not that likable. Like, I think she's much more likable in the book because you see more that she does for her father and to, like, care for the people of Highbury, and she kind of is resigned to seeing herself as this philanthropic spinster who's going to look after her father and kind of look after everyone else. I think she's much more likable in the book. Whereas in this, it all seems a bit token, what she does do for people.
And it's like one montage, right? Where she has like a do-gooding montage.
Oh, that's an amazing montage, actually. Because then she's like, Harriet, tell Mr. Elton what you've done. And then it cuts back to Harriet like knocking over things and getting a letter sleeve stuck to her back.
Harriet in that scene is 100% me.
With a letter sleeve stuck to her back, just like not knowing how to help out at all.
Like, what do I say? This is kind of awkward. Like, I'm a stranger in your house and you're clearly having a hard time. You've never met me before. I don't know what to say.
I'm not going to come and feed you soup and put you in bed. Yeah.
I don't know you well enough. I wouldn't appreciate that if it was me. I'm going to knock over this pile of baskets. Like, why is there a pile of baskets in your house?
You know, could I be further into the wall at this point? Overall, we're saying romance for Emma and Knightley, low. Romance for Harriet and Robert Martin really takes the biscuit.
Yeah. And I think romance, like, because Ewan McGregor is, like, I don't even know. I have no words to describe how meh he is.
Such a non-event.
Such a non-event. There's not really like sexual tension between him and Emma, or even him and Jane Fairfax.
Yeah, nah. Melly's mama's got problems.
Can the filmmakers solve them? I've got my mom's problems with the film because my mom has opinions about everything. And she said that she described Harriet as too strapping. Which I think is actually not a very good call. Like, yeah, Toni Collette is like, because Toni Collette gained weight for the role, apparently.
I read that to be Rubenesque.
To be Rubenesque. And like, it's just because she's next to Gwyneth Paltrow, who's like this little tiny twig Swan. Thing. Swan, yeah.
Swan.
I don't think it's like a fair criticism of the film. So,
God. Your mum is just the queen of kind of, I don't even know, like euphemistic insults.
Period dramas. My next segment is, what should the drinking game be to this film?
She drinks a tea drink, she drinks a port drink, she drinks a spruce beer, she drinks an orange wine.
My drinking game is actually really shit, and it's whenever you see animals. There's like animals throughout this film, there's heaps of animals. There's the dogs, there's always like background cows. Instead of having background actors, they've got some background cows, but it wasn't great. Right. There's a few background geese. Yeah. Can you think of any? I guess maybe finish a drink anytime Mr. Knightley and Emma talk about how they're kind of siblings.
Their strange pseudo-incestuous relationship. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think every time Gwyneth Paltrow raises her eyebrow in a kind of coy manner, like, you know, the cover art that they did for it where she's sort of peering coquettishly over a teacup.
Do you think she's raising her eyebrows, or do you think it's just that her eyebrows are overplucked because it's a 90s?
I think she definitely has sort of eyebrow raise moments. You would be absolutely smashed by the end of the first half of the film.
Oh, yeah, which is what you want.
Yeah, out of a drinking game, sure thing.
Period dramas. The next segment is what Harry Potter actors are in the film. Because most of these period dramas are just like the cast of Harry Potter.
The air is full of powdered root of asphodel.
Lovely.
In this case, there's only one Harry Potter actor, which is Sophie Thompson, who plays Miss Bates in this, and she plays Mafalda Hopkirk, a ministry witch.
That's who she is. She's the one that Hermione Polyjuice potions into, isn't she?
Yes.
Thank you. That was bugging me.
Spin me right off, baby, right off, like Joey, baby, let's make a spin-off.
Are there any spin-offs that you would want to see? Because I would really want to watch Frank Churchill and Jane Fairfax's story. Kind of, I think their love story is way more interesting than Mr. Knightley and Emma's story. Frank Churchill, in a way, is way more complex and compelling. Like, he's not really that good.
Yeah, he's really horrible. He actually like puts Jane through quite a lot of torture. I mean, I'm sure there is fan fiction or
I don't want to read.
Kind of spin-off novels. You don't want to read it, just want to think about it. Yeah. As much as she's kind of completely odious, I would love a bit more Mrs. Elton. Her just disastrously trying to kind of inflate her sense of self-importance in the parish and failing miserably.
Like in a kind of Curb Your Enthusiasm, this person's got like really high idea of who they are, and yet it's just always like falling on their face because they're a terrible person.
Absolutely. I'd really like to read like her kind of guide to social etiquette. I think that would be really, really funny.
So today we're going to picnic like it's 1799.
So one of our segments is talking about the parties of the Regency period, and which parties from this adaptation would we want to go to and why?
I would not want to go to a party in Highbury, because the big news at that party, the first party, is that Frank Churchill wrote a letter and they're all like around the letter. And how bored do you have to be that you're like, someone's estranged son wrote a quite boring letter to his new stepmother. It's just like, that does not seem like a good party.
Excuse me, did you see the penmanship?
Pen-personship.
Sorry. You humble me, Millie. Yeah, I mean, I actually think that's a point. I think they're supposed to be incredibly boring parties in Highbury because Emma has such a small world that she's in charge of, and she feels like really threatened, doesn't she? But the parties do seem exceptionally dull. Highbury, more like Lowbury.
period dramas.
So obviously we are exploring films and series that were made in the past, and some things have stood the test of time, but some things have not aged well. Did anything stand out to you in this adaptation?
Okay, so the scene where they get attacked by Romani people.
Yep.
That is kind of the source material, but still, I think if they were to do it now, they would hopefully have a bit more of a nuanced understanding about a gang of G words attacking.
Yeah. Like, attacking, that's literally it. Their entire identity is just, these are dangerous people that attack them. And that's like the only place in which, they appear.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible.
But yeah, so Emma, there's not really any kind of cultural diversity. I think the class is interesting because it's, as we'll find with many of the period dramas, it's obviously focused on kind of the country estate owning gentility. There's a little bit of class discussion, which I think is interesting, about Miss Bates having been the daughter of a vicar, and then with that holding a position of influence and then having fallen from that.
Emma is partly about someone being a snob and then learning that being a snob is wrong. So there's the Romani people, there's that boy, who's getting broth for his mom from the village, like, and then there's the poor person that she and Harriet visit. And that's like it. So as much as it's about not being a snob, it's like not being a snob within the genteel social class.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there are rules for like how you interact with people in a lower class than you. Emma's sort of criticized for not seeing that Harriet's not of the same class as her. There's that really interesting line, isn't there, where Emma says that the Martins are exactly the kind of people that I have nothing to do with, like any lower, and I might be of help to them. The other bit that made me just super uncomfortable is like Mr. Elton. In the past, I've always watched that and just thought it was so funny because he's in the carriage, because I've just thought, oh, that's so funny, like what an idiot, oh it's so funny, what a fun misunderstanding. And watching it back, I was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible, poor Emma. He's drunk alone with her in the carriage. It made me very uncomfortable.
Oh, 100, I completely agree with you. I think Caleb and I have been watching the AFI top 100 films, and I'm kind of become desensitized to really dodgy male female sexual coercion scenes. So this one I was like, oh, it doesn't even register anymore, but you're right, like it's terrible.
And I just think it's funny, like whether it was my youth or it was a different time, just seeing it as primarily comedic, whereas actually now I'm like, oh, Emma, you were in real danger there. I just was like, ugh, this is not well.
Yeah, and I guess also because it's being played for laughs.
That's what I mean. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, problematic.
Period dramas.
I think a good way to kind of sum up, do we give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down? Then this is based off of Siskel and Ebert, who were two famous film reviewers. Well, they had a show from the 1970s to the 1990s, and they would always end their reviews with either a thumbs up or a thumbs down. So if we both give Emma a thumbs up, then Emma gets two thumbs up. If we both give it a thumbs down, then they wouldn't put that on the poster. So do you give Emma a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Emma, thumbs up.
Emma, thumbs down.
What?
Yeah, I'm serious. I'm serious. Like, it has a really special place in my heart. Reminds me of a great summer holiday when I'm with my family. Reminds me of drawing lots of pictures of Empire waistline gowns. I think Sophie Thompson is a triumph, but it doesn't have enough good stuff for me to give it a thumbs up.
Wow, savage. Next episode, we are going to be discussing the absolute gem that is Sense and Sensibility.
1995.
Play us out, Mel.
Have you not heard my...